Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hi, and welcome to my podcast, I Shouldn't Say This, but my name is Katie Leeson and I'm Managing Director of Social Chain UK. This week, joining me on the podcast is UK News Editor for LinkedIn, Emily Spaven. Now, I'm sure you'll have seen me on LinkedIn and you know how important it is that I've built my personal brand, but we wanted to know how to take it further. So we've spoken to Emily about tricks, tips, and algorithm hacks that will help you with your LinkedIn profile. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode of I Shouldn't Say This, But. Thank you so much for joining me today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on, and I can't wait to sort of delve into the ins and outs and what it's like to be at LinkedIn. But I want to start up with a warm-up exercise first, if that's all right. Okay. It's taken from the game We're Not Really Strangers, and it's a series of questions that two people ask each other when they've just met to sort of get to know each other a little bit and break the ice, if that's all right.
Okay, right, sure.
Who in your life can you be the most vulnerable with?
Oh, my husband. Yeah. And if you're married and that's not your answer, then I think there's a big problem.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I'd also be worried if that wasn't the one. What belief about yourself no longer serves you?
Well, I guess this is a big one, but that I'm not good enough. And I know you speak a lot about kind of imposter syndrome and that kind of thing. So yeah, I suppose that's, I don't think it ever serves you, but you know, if it's been something that you've held on to for a long time, then yeah.
Tackling that inner imposter is like a thing. I use it to my advantage now. So it gives me a kick up the bum if I need it. Because it's usually when I'm kind of get a little bit more comfortable that the imposter comes out. So it gives me a kick to motivate myself a little bit. That's how I try and use it now.
Yeah.
It's like a little motivator. Yeah. And then the third one, think of someone that you admire and then tell us why that person came to mind.
I guess so. There's four of us that are best friends from university, and I think just like each of them, there's bits of each of them and what each of them have done that are kind of equally inspiring but in different ways. So yeah, I would say my gal pals, if I can pick more than one.
Yeah, of course you can, and you always need your cheerleaders, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You need your support system who are there through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100% on that one. So that's our game, but now we'll dive into the actual main topic. What is your journey before joining LinkedIn?
Sure. So my background is in journalism. So I studied journalism at university, and then I've worked in newspapers and online digital journalism since then. I did a year at Google, so went out of journalism and into an editorial role there. So doing kind of copywriting, I was writing kind of help guides. And then, yeah, it wasn't for me. So I went back into journalism after that and worked at a number of kind of finance and fintech and tech publications, and then joined LinkedIn about 2.5 years ago. So,
What was it that made you want to go into journalism?
I don't know. Do you know, I think I'm one of those lucky people that from a very young age knew what I wanted to do. And I know that's very rare. And I think it must be so difficult if you don't. You know, I can imagine it's kind of daunting and you feel very lost if you just don't have that from a young age. But I think from about 14 or 15, I always loved English and loved writing at school. But from about the age of 15, I just thought that sounds fun. So And yeah, I just kind of followed it from there.
So what's your role now at LinkedIn?
So I am UK news editor at LinkedIn. There's a team of about 65 of us across the globe that are on the editorial team, and we produce news content for their platform.
Great. What type of news do you cover?
So we cover kind of broad business topics. So don't try not to go too niche, because it's basically for the whole of LinkedIn. So we don't do deep dives into specific industries. There are some, that said, there are some reporters on the team in the States that focus on specific verticals. But in terms of the international editors, we focus on sort of broad business news. And then we also cover evergreen topics, but stuff that's workplace related. So we'll do items around things like mental health in the workplace, gender pay gap, those sorts of topics.
Which topics do you think have the best traction? What are people most interested in, do you see, from the work you do?
There's some interesting trends. So from a news perspective, retail does really well. So whenever we have a retail story go up, it generates loads of interest, I guess, because everyone's a consumer. Mm-hmm. And then there's so many people that work within retail as well. So everyone's kind of got an opinion on it. So whenever there's an announced closure of, let's say, Mothercare going out of business, that generates a lot of conversation, because everyone's kind of looking at how consumer behaviour is changing and moving online.
There's quite a lot of unknowns, isn't there, within retail? I think that's the thing. And everyone's trying to understand what the future holds. And it does feel sad when places close. And you still hear people now talk about when they used to go in Woolworths as a kid and the joys that they had. And then, but no one really fights to save them.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Goes in at the time.
Because I join in on it, you know, with the whole, oh, it is a real shame. But then, you know, if I look at my own shopping habits, then what were the last things that I bought, and did I buy them online, or were they in a shop? Like, I know what the answer is. So
yeah.
It's a difficult one. You know, we have these emotional attachments, but then don't do anything to kind of like actually fight for them.
Why is news so important to LinkedIn?
Our members want to know what's going on in the world. And I think that, you know, so then it makes sense for us to provide them with that information. I think if you feel informed and you feel like you know what's going on in current affairs or within your industry news, then you feel better equipped to do your job to the best of your abilities. So I think that's, you know, why we decided to start doing news on LinkedIn.
Mm.
Our main goal as an editorial team is to provide people with news and views that kind of help them to talk about the things that matter, if that makes sense.
So is it there to help fuel other conversations in what we're posting as consumers as well? Is that kind of the reason for it?
Yeah. So with traditional publishers, they will present you with a story, and yes, there'll be a comment section at the bottom that you can join in on, but it's kind of an afterthought rather than a primary element of that piece. Whereas we try and make that a main focus of the stories that we do. So we'll give a brief summary of the story at the top, and we'll link out to different news sources so that if you want to read more in depth, then you can click through to, let's say, the BBC or the Guardian and read the full story. But then we pin member posts to the bottom of that short summary, so you can kind of see what people are saying about that particular issue, and then you can join in the conversation yourself.
Nice. So it's like a full inclusive platform.
Yeah. So it's really highlighting what people on the platform have to say about these particular issues.
How does LinkedIn choose what news to highlight on the trending page? What's the process for that?
So in the news and views module, which is at the top right of the site on desktop, so there's usually around 10 stories that show up there. So we don't have like a huge breadth of coverage. I tend to just look at what the main business stories are of the day, and I kind of have an idea of the sort of topics that resonate well with our audience. So it's kind of like any editor of a newspaper. You just use your experience and your gut to know the stories that are going to land.
Mm.
But then, you know, obviously being a tech company, we do use analytics to kind of decide how long we keep stuff in the module for. And if something's not performing well, then okay, let's try something else. So there's a lot of experimenting as well.
You mentioned then that you take stuff down if it's not doing as well. What is good? What does good look like for a news story?
Yeah, good question. So we can look at live analytics to see how many people are looking at a particular item at any one time. But then also just going through into those individual news items. Internally, we call them storylines, so it might be easier for me to just say that. So we go into each storyline and see the posts that we've pinned in there. Are they generating conversation? Are they not? But also just trying to keep like a fresh cycle of news in there. So sometimes it's literally just a case of if it's been up there for a day already, then it's time to shift it out for something new.
Cool. I want to move on now to content, because obviously I post quite a lot of content and it's been really successful for me. And what content type works best on the platform?
be interesting to see what your response to this is, but we found that video is really taking off. And, you know, for obvious reasons, if you've got a feed full of static posts and then there's a video one in the middle of it, that's the one that's going to catch your eye. So, yeah, we found that they're definitely generating a lot of reactions and a lot of comments, and they're doing pretty well. So the three types of content that we have on LinkedIn, there's posts, there's videos, and there's articles. Articles are kind of having less prominence, not for any kind of architectural reasons, but just because I think just the short form content is just resonating better. You know, people are busy. They don't have time to necessarily read a 2,000-word article. So I think more people are using posts and, as I say, video.
It is hard, isn't it? It's hard to dedicate time to actually reading long form content now in your day when LinkedIn's probably, I don't tend to use it outside of working hours. It's more in the day. So I can kind of understand that, actually. Could you give us some tips on captioning your posts?
So the post box on LinkedIn, it's got a maximum character count of 1,300. So that's about 200 words. So that's quite a lot to play with. Mm. Don't feel like you have to use it all, but, you know, there's a good amount there to get enough information. And if you are using the post to accompany a video, then don't assume that everyone is going to listen to the video. So if you don't have subtitles, then you need to describe in that text box what is being said in the video, because otherwise, if people haven't got their headphones, that the message isn't going to get to them.
Yeah, we say that a lot across all social platforms because people tend to listen without sound.
Yeah.
And there's so many examples of people who just put videos up with no sound, without any sort of subtitles or anything on it. And you're losing the majority of your audience before you've even begun.
Exactly. And I understand, you know, it is a lot of extra legwork to get those subtitles on, but if you've gone to the effort of making a video in the first place, then you may as well go that extra mile to try and, you know, get it seen by as many, or heard by as many people as possible.
Yeah, just taking that little bit of extra time just to get it right, rather than it completely being a waste of time completely, I think is a really important thing. What tips can you give us about how to grow a following on LinkedIn?
So tips for growing a following. So posting regularly, and most of the time I'd advise to kind of, I know it's the buzzword at the moment, but be authentic. So it's something that's a bit more than just, you know, straightforward, dry advice on something. Try and put a bit of personality in there and think about whether it's useful. So don't go for promotional stuff. People don't react well to feeling like they're being sold to.
Mm.
So, you know, if your goal is to grow your personal brand and a following for yourself, rather than if you're trying to sell something, then, you know, go for it. But if it's a case of, you know, trying to put yourself out there as a thought leader, then, you know, go easy on the selling techniques and just share your expertise, share your experience, and people tend to react well to that.
Yeah, it's a tricky one for me to balance, because obviously it's like I want to be as useful to people that are watching, but also sell what Social Chain does. So it's a really hard balance to meet. So we've been called out a couple of times on being too salesy on Social Chain. So yeah, it's an interesting balance.
Yeah, but you know, it's kind of a brand association exercise, isn't it? With your post, your picture and your name is front and center, and right underneath your name is your job title in your company.
Mm.
So it's there, like people are going to see it. So you focus on what the kind of personal message is there, because the brand's already getting its moment in the sun along with your post.
That's true. That's true. That's a really good tip. Do you have any do's and don'ts, any horror stories that you can share?
Yeah, I don't have any specific horror stories to share, but I guess the basic rules of common decency apply. So be respectful, don't go trolling people, and you know, LinkedIn's a great platform for showing off your expertise, so don't waste it by trying to bring down someone else's ideas. Showcase what your expertise is and your intelligence.
Be nice.
Yeah,
it's a key thing. Just be nice. What common mistakes do you think people make?
I think the main mistake that people make is feeling like they need to think of something massively profound in order to post it on LinkedIn. But you don't put that much thought into what you post on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. You know, you'll put up a picture of your avocado toast without a second thought. But a lot of people are kind of a bit scared of posting, whereas, you know, it doesn't have to be. So that's the kind of main thing that I would advise is don't be frightened of, you know, you're an expert in your field. So why not post about the things that you know?
Yeah, it's a bit of imposter syndrome stuff coming out there, isn't it? People get too scared because they don't want to be seen as like they don't called out for not knowing what they're talking about.
Yeah, or like, who do you think you are sharing your opinion on here? But it's everyone's platform, you know, it's whatever you want to make of it. So
Does accepting every single request impact your reach?
So you don't get penalized for mass accepting or, you know, mass requesting connections. The only thing is, think about what you want your feed to look like on LinkedIn. So if you are accepting every connection request and it's people that you don't know, just be mindful that their posts are going to show up in your feed. So do you really want to be seeing what they're posting about? Of course, you can connect with someone and then unfollow them. So you can stay connected, but they don't show up in your feed. So that's an option.
Right, okay.
But I don't know. There's a couple of schools of thought on it. We don't have like a set advice on it. So some people in the company would say only connect with people that you know. But then, you know, that doesn't always make sense for everyone. So from a journalist's point of view, it's great for me to connect with people that work in that I've never met before, but they work in interesting companies that I'm thinking about covering. You can, it's your own to manage, but yeah, that's the main thing to think about is what you want your feed to look like.
Yeah, it's been good for me for growing my network, and not knowing everyone, but then also being able to reach people that can help or I can help them. So for me, if I just kept it in the realms of who I knew, I don't think that it would have had the same impact on social chain. So for me, that's why I think I've got, but I do think there's people out there that are just after the numbers. I saw someone on there the other day that I tried adding me, and they're in the, even in their bio, 18,000 followers. That's not the point.
Yeah. And the kind of accepts all follow requests or all connection requests.
Yeah.
It's just like,
no.
Yeah.
Why?
But, you know, each to their own. If that's working for them and that approach is kind of getting them what they need out of LinkedIn, then I guess that's fine. But it's not like the approach that I would necessarily be promoting to everyone.
Yeah, it's about building the platform then that you get the most value out of.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does LinkedIn reward?
So more anecdotally than giving any sort of insider information, but the posts that seem to perform the best and you could therefore say are favoured by the algorithms are the ones that generate conversations, so the ones that generate lots of comments rather than just focusing on likes and shares. So that would be one of my main bits of advice, is try and generate conversation with your posts. Don't try and just put your thoughts out there and just leave them and for people to think how wonderful you are. Surely the aim is for people to engage, you know, so if someone asks you a question relating to the post that you've put up, get involved. And then the more comments that appear on a post, the more our algorithms will see, oh, this is still timely, this is still relevant, and they'll keep throwing it back up in the feed.
What makes a post get on trending?
So by trending, do you mean the module in the top right-hand side? So that's all managed by the editorial team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's by me and my colleagues.
It's got to be really nice to you.
Just got to be real nice.
Yeah.
As I mentioned before, we select the news stories that we want to cover and then the kind of evergreen topics. But we do that by doing a kind of a news hunt. We see what is being covered by the national newspapers and other publications, and then decide on the ones that we want to feature on LinkedIn.
Mm.
In terms of the posts that are featured within those storylines, we do some quite basic and some more in-depth searches on the platform to see who's posting about those particular topics. So it could be anything from just searching for a particular hashtag or a company name, or even we can search for if people have shared a specific link to a news article. So as those topics are kind of newsworthy ones, if you want to kind of get your opinion out there on a particular current affairs matter, then just, you know, using hashtags that are relevant and talking about the biggest news of the day.
Okay, cool. And then linking it to an article.
I don't have to link to an article, but if you think about it as a standalone post, so let's say I don't ever see it, then it needs to make sense as a standalone post. But
yeah.
The idea is that you, let's say with the mother care example, you would talk about what you think it means for the future of the high street, but then you might put in your hashtags, retail, future of retail, hashtag mother care, you know, all of those kind of things, because that increases the likelihood that myself or one of the editorial team will see that post and use it.
Ah, right. Okay. Brilliant. I'm going to start doing that. I'm now going to move on to personal branding. Why, in your opinion, is LinkedIn the best platform for building a personal brand?
I think, you're probably a better place to answer this than I am, because you've done a great job of it.
Thanks.
But I mean, from If you look at the way that your profile and the feed on LinkedIn is structured, it's quite different to that. The profile specifically is quite different to other social media platforms. Like, you literally showcase your achievements and your employment history and your skills. So, you know, that's a great sort of boost for your personal brand. People can see there in black and white what you've done. Mm. And then within your employment history, you can feature great things that you've done there. So you can put links into maybe campaigns that you've worked on or press coverage that you've received, for example. So that's great for kind of showcasing what you've done. And then we have the option to do the different post types that I've talked about. So longer articles, if you feel like, you know, you've got something really weighty you want to say, or shorter posts and video. And I know those last two are available on other platforms, but I think LinkedIn's just kind of a bit of a different environment. It tends to be a more respectful place. So you can kind of, you can put your message out there and feel like you can engage in a more professional and perhaps adult conversation than you might get elsewhere.
Mm. See, there's a real opportunity to talk about things that matter to you, I think, on LinkedIn, whereas on the, when you can do it on other platforms, you kind of don't get the same response, I think.
Yeah, and you're not fighting to cut through the noise as much. Mm. You know, everyone's on LinkedIn, most people are on LinkedIn to talk about, you know, their industry, and it's not there for talking about, I don't know, where you went on holiday.
Yeah. Sometimes people do try that, and then it just it stands out like a sore thumb, doesn't
it? Yeah.
So I was very, very privileged to be named as one of the UK top voices. Thank you for that.
Oh, look, you don't need to thank me. You did it all yourself, so.
Well, no, I'd like to say thanks, because it was a very important moment, because we didn't start the personal branding for that reason, but it's nice to be recognised that it is making a difference. What is Top Voices for anyone that's listening, and why is it important?
Sure. So it's one of the lists that we produce every year. So we do a list of top companies, top startups, and top voices. And Top Voices is there to basically celebrate members that are using the platform to produce interesting content. So we have a team of data scientists, and they pull together data on who is producing interesting content and the kind of engagement metrics that they're achieving through that content. So there's a second round of going through the data then, and that's done manually by editors, and we go through and look at each of the profiles and see what they're posting about, because just because something's getting loads of shares and loads of comments and loads of like downstream engagement doesn't mean it's like the best content. So you kind of have to use a qualitative approach then. So we go through and take a decision as the editorial team as to who's kind of saying interesting stuff.
So there's a data and then a human approach to how it's pulled together.
Yeah.
Nice. And why do you think it's important?
I guess because we do want to celebrate that element of using the platform for a content basis. Like, there's loads of different ways that people can use LinkedIn, but our editorial team is specifically focused on the content that's on the platform. So we think it's important to encourage people and also just to showcase what is possible on LinkedIn, because a lot of people still don't see it as a content platform. So it's a great way of us saying like, look, this is what you could be doing, or these are the people you could follow if you're looking for inspiration.
Mm. Yeah, I'm very privileged to be part of that list. And then the last bit, just on LinkedIn as a company, can you share with us what the vision and values are of LinkedIn?
So in terms of LinkedIn's vision, it's to create economic opportunity for everyone in the workforce. So whether that's connecting them to someone that's going to further their career, or whether it's connecting them with a new job, or helping them to upskill and learn something new. In terms of the mission, it's to connect the world's professionals to make them more productive and successful.
And LinkedIn was renowned for being a bit of a recruitment platform when it first came out. Still is a little bit of that. You still get quite a lot of recruiters on there. How has that changed over the years? And do you know what the direction LinkedIn's going in?
So LinkedIn initially started out just as a professional networking site. So for people to connect with people that they'd met at conferences or someone they'd had a business meeting with. And then the recruitment kind of side then came in, I guess, because it was realized, you know, got all these professionals on here. what a great place to try and find someone new for a position that I'm looking to fill.
It's like the golden database.
Yeah. And look, I can attest that it works. I've got 3 jobs through LinkedIn. Yeah. So you know. And
that's how I came to Social Chain, was yeah. through LinkedIn.
Yeah. So it still is, you know, a very successful platform for that, but it definitely is a lot more than that now as well. There's a lot of different kind of business lines within the company, and the focus is constantly shifting and changing. So we've got lines in sales, in marketing and learning. So they acquired a company called lynda.com. And so there's a whole LinkedIn learning section now, which focuses on enabling people to upskill and learn new things. So it could be anything from how to become a more proficient public speaker to how to play a guitar. So there's like courses on there for everything. So there's some really interesting stuff on there. So you can find that like at the top right of the site, there's a button there that you can go through to that. I don't work for that team, but it sounds like I'm plugging them. But
I didn't know that was there. So I'm going to have a look for that.
Yeah, no, there's some super interesting stuff there. And then of course my team focusing on content. So that's becoming a really important thing for LinkedIn and other social platforms. Mm. So that's definitely something that's going to be expanding over the next kind of couple of months, years and beyond, is the focus on having an internal team that's producing content, but also encouraging people on the platform to create their own content.
Nice. So it's going to be a full universe of learning and opportunities and connections.
Yeah.
Nice. That is all my questions, but I'd like to finish on my admission submission for you. Cool. So the podcast is called I Shouldn't Say This But, because I admit things probably that an MD wouldn't normally say. And I wonder whether, not to put you on the spot, but if you had anything that, an admission that you'd like to give to the listeners, something maybe about your career, something, it can be anything. I mean, you heard Davina DeCampo's one. That's probably been the most extreme, but
yeah. I've got a potentially controversial one.
Oh, please.
Non-work related.
Oh, go for it.
I don't really like cats.
Oh,
I know.
And you work on social media. I know. That is bold.
So in my defense, I'm allergic to cats. Ah. So I'm kind of like, it's inbuilt that I'm not supposed to be friends with them. And also, I've got a little sausage dog and he had a scrap with a cat the other week and it was very expensive at the vets. So that's kind of further cemented my opinion on that.
I think that's fair. I think there needs to be more dog content on social platforms, maybe not on LinkedIn, but on other social platforms.
I did
anyway
come across someone on LinkedIn the other day that's a professional dog portrait artist, so you know, there's a job for that.
There's a job for everything, I think, nowadays, isn't there? Thank you so much. That was extremely useful. There's definitely things I'm going to take out of that and start to look at my content. So, and I'm sure that the listeners will also agree and take lots of value out of this podcast. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks.